This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 91-year-old Eugene Mould, a husband for 71 years to Anita, father of four, grandfather to 14, and now even great-grandpa to five more. He might have been your math teacher, your principal, your college instructor, but none of that would be true if he hadn't survived 43 missions with the 406th Night Leaflet Squadron, the B-17s and B-24s he piloted, dropping propaganda leaflets over Europe. Secret psychological warfare that most of us have never heard of before.
When was it that you came to understand the full nature of the work that you had done and the impact that it had had in dropping these leaflets, not just for German soldiers, but for civilians as well?
Probably after I got out of the service and met with the crew and talked it over. And, you know, we finally realized the significance of what we had done.
Mm-hmm. Were you even allowed to talk about it when you were doing it?
After a mission, we would talk to intelligence, our people, of course. But
sure.
But nobody instructed me not to talk about it after I got out, no.
Uh-huh.
No.
But, I mean, for instance, while you were flying these missions, because this is a fairly long period of time that you're flying these missions, letters home, were you allowed to say what you were doing?
No, she didn't know what I was doing. I would write a letter and say, don't worry about me, but she didn't know what that meant, and I couldn't tell her.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't say where I was in England, just somewhere in the United Kingdom.
And if you said it, they probably would have taken a little razor blade and cut it out.
Yeah, yeah.
How often did you get mail from her?
Neither of us remembers for sure. maybe once a week or something like that.
You have all the letters all these years later.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that you do understand what it was that you did, and you mentioned reunions, and we've got a great picture of you with your crew in World War II and with the same crew standing in the same spots all these years later. What are you proud of? What gives you satisfaction in the work that you got to do?
Well, that I completed my missions, that nobody was hurt. We were all safe. We all came back in one piece.
And were you able to keep that same crew together for most of your missions?
Yes.
What did that do for those relationships? How would you describe the camaraderie that you had with
we were good friends, and we obviously depended on each other during the missions. The oldest on the crew was 22. The youngest was 19.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So you don't come to full realization of what's going on or what's happening until it's all over.
When did you come back from England?
On my wife's birthday. I got back to Concord, California on her birthday, March 26, 45.
Uh-huh. Quite a birthday present.
Yeah.
Did she know you were coming?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. Eventually, I re-enrolled at UC Berkeley. But I was sent to Liberal, Kansas, and then to Smyrna, Tennessee, where I was trained to be a B-24 instructor. But by then, I had enough points, so I trained to be an instructor, but I never served as an instructor. Just got out of the service.
Became a math teacher.
Yes, I did.
In all those years in education, did you ever tell any of your students about what you did in the war?
Yes, yes. I would do that like the day before Christmas vacation. I would just talk about World War II rather than teach a math lesson.
Would you wear your jacket?
No.
The jacket that you still fit into, this is the same one you were wearing 70 years ago?
Yes, yes. That's the dress jacket. That's not for combat. That's the dress.
Right, right. Yeah. You needed something a little more substantial if you're flying up at 20,000 feet.
Yeah.
Six times you were cited with the Air Medal. That means you're up there quite a bit. You did some things that mattered. Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, I'm proud that I was awarded that. It's, to be honest, not a high-level medal. If you're good enough to survive enough combat hours, you get an Air Medal. You know, so it's kind of on automatic.
Well, guys tell me the same thing about the Distinguished Flying Cross, but you flew the 43 missions. We didn't, and we certainly didn't do it at night all by ourselves in one plane. And you know, that's one thing I was going to ask you about your crew. A lot of the Air Corps veterans that I've talked to on bomber crews, there was a connection within the crew, but a lot of times the officers would hang out with other officers from other planes and other crews. With you guys flying alone so much, do you think your crew became more tight-knit than maybe a regular bomber crew might have?
Yeah, probably so. But then, you know, there was the officers' club and the enlisted men's club, so we didn't socialize when we weren't flying.
Did you have other guys on your crew that were married like you were?
Yes. Yes, the navigator was married. The co-pilot was married. That's all.
So that just piled on a little more responsibility on you to get them home, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever think about that? Do you think about those close calls, losing the engines, anti-aircraft fire, that corkscrew dive to get away from a fighter plane, and think about your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren? And
yeah, I haven't. If I hadn't survived all that, they wouldn't exist, of course. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about it. Yes, I do.
You would have left Anita a widow instead of getting ready for your 71st anniversary.
Yes, yes. Wouldn't have been able to go on honor flight like I did last October with you. And
yeah.
Yeah, that was an incredible experience, and I thank you.
Well, the whole idea is we're trying to thank you guys for what you did, and I know you turned a lot of heads wearing that uniform, that dress jacket in Washington, D.C.
I was accused of being a chick magnet because I had my Army Air Corps jacket on when we were visiting monuments and memorials.
How did Anita feel about that?
she didn't know until I got back.
What happens in Washington stays in Washington.
Yeah.
For you, you've been in Modesto since 1950, so that's 65 years here in the San Joaquin Valley. And Castle Air Force Base, for most of that time, was an active base, and you had the B-52s flying right over you here in Modesto. So to be able to take off and land on that runway, did that mean something to you?
I didn't fly from Castle.
I know you didn't specifically, but just knowing the history of that
base. Oh, yeah, yeah. Could relate to that. And I remember well after the war, there was a B-17 at Modesto Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in our house, and it flew over, and I said, that's a B-17. I just knew the sound.
Yeah.
I don't know how I know the sound, but I know that I recognized it.
I bet you probably know a B-24 if it flew over right now, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know you'd know a P-51.
Yes. Yeah.
Even though you never flew one.
No, I never did. Yeah.
You mentioned the honor flight. What was the best part of that experience for you?
World War II Memorial, Air Force Memorial, Arlington National Cemetery, changing of the guard, all very meaningful and emotional, and in some cases physically demanding.
Sure.
The second day, as you know, was a pretty full day.
Well, how long were those night flying missions you flew?
Up to 8 hours.
All right.
Yeah.
So what was more physically demanding, 8 hours in the air at night over Europe or that long day in D.C.?
The mission, yeah.
And in Washington, D.C., did you take care of business and then kiss the ground in a different spot?
No, I did not.
At that World War II memorial, there are a lot of different aspects of it.
Yeah.
What made the biggest impression on you, and what did you reflect on in the time that you were
there? Well, I thought it was very impressive. The Atlantic side is where I flew. They had Atlantic Pacific side, and people coming up to me because I was wearing my jacket and saying, is that the original? And ladies coming up to me and with their kids. And I offered to let the kids wear my jacket, and a few of them did, and we took pictures. And a man from Thailand with a couple of women came up to me and asked, are you a general? No, I was just the first lieutenant.
You didn't stick a couple extra stars on there somewhere, did you?
No.
Yeah, I didn't see those. What about the homecoming back in Atwater at Castle?
Very impressive, very emotional. I'll never forget that. You know, we walked down that line with people on either side and waving to us and clapping. It was meaningful and emotional.
Did it make you feel like people understood?
Yes, and appreciated.
Mission accomplished then. You know, I want to ask you a little bit more about the leaflets and that duty, because it is such a unique aspect of World War II that probably a lot of people listening today have never heard of before and had no clue that that was happening. If you can educate us a little bit about that and how you would explain its significance or what gives you pride in having carried out that task.
Yeah, I feel good about the surrender certificates we dropped the German soldiers, and informing people in Holland about what's going on. And when the German communications broke down, our intelligence would print up leaflets and telling them what to do. And it looked like it was from, we called it black propaganda. It was telling the German soldiers what to do and looking like it came from their command, but it came from us instead.
Uh-huh.
So advising them to surrender and where to go and what to do. So those are all things that I think that help save lives.
And again, this is something that really no one knew was happening at the time. Does that ever make you wonder what's happening these days?
Yeah, sure. I have no idea if they do that now.
They probably have a very high-tech way of doing it.
Yeah.
And I know you gave Anita a great birthday present in 1945 by showing back up in Concord on her birthday. But do you remember when you heard about VE Day and really that the ultimate culmination of what you guys were doing over there had actually happened and Germany had surrendered?
Yeah, that's when we were in Liberal, Kansas.
Uh-huh.
We heard about that, yes.
Was that meaningful?
Yes, it was. And we went to a church service that same day because that's who we are.
To be married for more than 70 years and still enjoy each other's company as much as you
can. Yeah, we absolutely do. And then the word I use is compromise. That's probably a cliche, but it's true for us. We feel very blessed. We have health and we have all those years of marriage. It's wonderful.
When you look back on it all, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I hear what you say and you know that you're in a church service because that's who you are and you feel very blessed. Are you one of those who say, you know, I think God was looking out for me while I was over there?
Yes, absolutely, yes. When I told the story about the near mid-air collision in church one Sunday, one lady said to me, God had other plans for you. So thank goodness.
Amen. And we have your wife, Anita, here too. Thanks to Hometown Heroes affiliate KFIV in Modesto for letting us invade the recording studio. And Anita, I asked him what the secret to a 71-year marriage was. What would you say?
Give and take, I guess. We know each other so well now that I don't think we've had an argument for years. Things are just smooth.
Like 2 years, 5 years, 20 years?
I really don't know. I don't know.
So when he was over there flying these missions, and you don't know what he's doing, you just know he's over there and it's probably dangerous.
That's right.
What were you doing back home?
I was taking classes at Berkeley.
There was a special spot on the Berkeley campus for you?
A bridge. And I would, at 10:30 in the morning, and I knew what time it was over in England, and I would stop there and pray for him.
I guess somebody heard those prayers.
Oh, God heard them, that's for sure.
He's still here. Is there anything else that he didn't say about himself that you think the rest of us should know? What goes through your mind when you see him standing up tall with that dress jacket on?
I'm proud of him. I'm proud of the things he went through in order to keep our country safe.
For sure. And back to Mr. Mold now. Since you're an educator, and that's kind of like being a Marine, I bet. Once an educator, always an educator.
I was principal at Modesto High. I got transferred to Downey High School. After that, I got transferred to what at that time was the two continuation high schools. Uh-huh. I retired in 83, got a job at Stanislaus State in the education department until 92.
All right.
So I retired twice.
Yeah.
I'm through retiring. That's all.
You're not going to retire one more time? No. Okay. Out there in the listening audience could be students you had at Modesto High School, at Downey, and continuation school, or college kids from the Turlock area.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So there might be a lot of folks who are putting two and two together right now. But what I wanted to ask you in the vein of education, most of us alive today were not alive during World War II. We don't know what it was all about. We don't know how big it was, how dangerous the situations you folks put yourself in were, or really maybe what the significance of it all was. How would you encapsulate what you and 16 million other Americans did and why we need to remember it today?
I think that's a function of the United States. If it's like on the playground, if somebody's being bullied, somebody needs to step in and take care of that situation. I think that's what the United States did in World War II. We stopped the bullies.
Yes, you did.
We served notice on them and were successful. I'm glad I did what I did. I wouldn't want to do it again.
Well, I'm glad you did what you did and you came home to tell about it. And
I
want to say thank you for serving our country and for telling us your very unique story. Is there anything else you think we need to know?
Think we've covered it well.
Fair enough. Hop on hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos relating to Mr. Mold's story. Thanks for listening to the program today. We learn something new every time, don't we? I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.